From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hello and welcome to another podcast from the entertainment section at newsok.com and The Oklahoman. I'm George Lang, and with me today is Brandy McDonald and Nathan Poppy, and we're talking movies this weekend. It's July 4th weekend. There's a lot of stuff that's out there, and let's get started with the latest from Woody Allen. It's called Whatever Works.
And you're using the latest as a very loose term here.
Well, it's technically the latest because it was just released, but this is a script that has been sitting around since the mid-70s, and Woody Allen unearthed it when he was fearing that there was going to be an actor's strike. So he wanted to get a movie out this year, because he's got to have a movie out every year. That's this guy has one of the most ridiculous work ethics in Hollywood, and sometimes to his detriment, quite honestly. I mean, some directors, they take a little longer. This guy's just shooting them out.
And so he shoved the dinosaur skeleton out of the way.
That's right.
Dug and up so this old script.
That's right. That's right. He rolled away the bones, and then he had Whatever Works. Now, Whatever Works, he had written for Zero Mostel. Okay, Zero Mostel has been dead for 32 years.
Yeah.
So he kind of retooled the script, and he brought Larry David in to play the latest in a series of Woody Allen surrogates, Boris Yelnikov. And the thing about Whatever Works is that it plays like the rough sketch for two of his masterpieces, really, Annie Hall and Manhattan. You have elements of those two stories in Whatever Works. It's just not quite as good. So take this for what it's worth. It's kind of like watching sausage get made. You'd like if you really want the definite article, go and rent Annie Hall or Manhattan or both if you've got the time. So anyway, Larry David plays Boris Yelnikov, who's this self-declared genius, who's a complete misanthrope. He has absolutely no regard for the rest of the human race. He's constantly, like a lot of Allen's characters, he's horribly fearful of death. And what does he do when he has this panic attack that he's going to die? Well, he attempts suicide.
There's a sickening logic there.
After sort of a throwdown with his similarly intellectual wife Jessica, who's played by Carolyn McCormick, who's been a regular recurring player on Law and Order since the very beginning, Boris ends up with a divorce, moves into a cold water flat, and he spends most of his days in front of a deli complaining about life with his friends, who include Michael McKean is part of this ensemble. And then this young runaway from Mississippi named, get this, Melody St. Anne Celestine.
She seems nice.
Played by Evan Rachel Wood. Jumps out of a dark corner, as Boris is heading home and begs him for food. Naturally, he insults her. But then he goes ahead and invites her up to his apartment because, well, she's Evan Rachel Wood. After a lot of verbal sparring, naturally they end up married, because after all, this is a Woody Allen movie.
Where 4 decades differences between your male female leads is not really even breaking a sweat.
That's right. Now, Melody, she has sort of a calming effect on Boris, and Boris kind of introduces her to the wonderful world of hating people, and everything's all right with the world until Melody's mother Marietta shows up, who's played by Patricia Clarkson, who is always excellent in everything that she does. She's out to sort of subvert the relationship, and basically Whatever Works, after being this this May-December goofy romance, ends up being sort of about conflicting cultures and shades of morality, and it's really, really, really predictable. I mean, predictable as sunrise. Every single little minor plot point in this thing, every single character who shows up, you know where they're going. And this is really just an example of a script that should have been left in the vault. I mean, it's not terrible by any stretch. It's certainly not one of Allen's worst films, but I think we're kind of getting used to the idea of being ping-ponged with by Allen. I mean, we get a pretty great film, and then we get a not so great one.
Right.
You know, for every Match Point, there's a Scoop. For every Vicky Cristina Barcelona, then we've got whatever works.
Works.
So, you know, of course he's got this untitled Woody Allen London project that they have on IMDb, and IMDb is usually right about the Woody Allen stuff. He's got Anthony Hopkins in it, Josh Brolin, Frida Pinto is in it, a lot of great people. And so there's a lot of hope for this next one. Whatever works, it's the stopgap that it appears to be. So it's a real shame. Now, other things that are opening up are a little more promising, but tell us about it. Public Enemies, Nathan.
And talking about a real shame, we must rag the finger of shame.
Oh, yeah. Did Public Universal Enemies. Not show this film in Oklahoma?
That's a shock. It was not screened for critics.
You know who you are, the guy who sends us the emails. All right.
It's probably not his fault, George.
It's not his fault.
He's just the messenger.
But we don't like it. It's not working for the studio. You know it's not working for the studio. So, you know, you need to start, Universal needs to be showing these films, especially Public Enemies.
We're going to send Larry David to hang out in your office all day, if they don't.
It's going to get ugly. But Nathan has a wire review he's going to hash for us.
Hash it. The Associated Press, Christy Lemire has a review here. And with Public Enemies, we've kind of got this epic setup for a gangster drama unlike any other. We've got Michael
Poppy
Mann.
Poppy has dancing hands while he's talking
I
about
do,
this.
I do. Yeah. I do get excited when I hear Michael Mann's name. So, you know, we've got something big here. We've got Johnny Depp and Christian Bale, who are, you know, really famous for, like, really getting into their roles. And hopefully Christian Bale has gotten over his laryngitis and he won't be growling at us.
There will be growling.
And what we have here is a setup for, you know, something that could be potentially great, but trouble is Public Enemies, it's stagnant. It looks pretty. I mean, it's got the period piece, every setting, every piece it's beautiful. It's 1930 Chicago. Here we are. You're really looking at it. But the film, instead of, you know, picking up its pace and getting pretty, you know, very suspenseful. It just has this slow, low-key, steady pace the whole time. And, it almost gets borderline boring, which is very unfortunate when we have all these, you know, powerhouse actors, a great director.
Well, you know, this sounds like something else that I saw a couple of years ago. Michael Mann directed Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is really unfortunate. Go on.
Michael Mann seems to have lost his pacing sensibility.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Mann, he's following a famous bank robber, John Dillinger, played by Johnny Depp, and his crew is famous for pulling off some really well-orchestrated, fancy bank robberies. He escaped from prison. This guy, he knows how to do crime. And instead of really searching, what's inside of this guy, why he does what he does, because he was looked at as almost like a Robin Hood of Wall Street. He was
during the Depression.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He was stealing from all these people, and he was almost looked up to, and this film does not explore that at all. You're getting to see a very romanticized version of John Dillinger. Almost, it's described as someone that's like sexy and dangerous, and he's going to sweep you off your feet and then rob a bank with you, and it'll be beautiful and fun. You know, we're not getting really in depth here. You know, it's just a very, playful kind of character that Michael Mann has presented to us. So it's kind of unfortunate that we're not getting, really in depth here. And it just kind of trails off at the end, and we're not getting to see something different or interesting. But we have a couple supporting characters that are excellent. Billy Crudup, he has some good moments in most films that he's in. But he's playing J. Edgar Hoover, and Purvis.
Melvin Purvis.
Yes.
Christian Bale plays Melvin Purvis.
Right.
Yeah.
Purvis.
The Fed who went after Dillinger.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he comes off, unfortunately, as, you know, slightly too serious and buffoonish almost. So it's just really
buffoonish.
It's really unfortunate that we didn't get to see a really compelling movie here.
Well, that's
well,
that
we
is a real
know
shame.
Because we haven't seen it, but that's what Christy Meier said
but
about it.
Christy Meier is giving this 2.5 stars.
Well, I think that's a disappointment.
Wow. So. Okay, we're 2 for 2 on 2.5 stars, and let's see if we can do a little bit better with Sherry.
Sherry. You get a,
Sherry.
You know what? You get
my
a 2.5 star review.
Sherry. I'm from Paris.
You get a 2.5 star review for Sherry. So, yeah, Sherry. I did see Sherry. They actually managed to screen that.
Nice.
Here. Nice job. But I think it's really interesting that this film is on the same bill, so to speak, as Whatever Works, because it's a film that you're almost, if you're a woman, which I am, you're almost
she
sorry
is. She
that
really
it's
is.
Hold on,
you're almost
oh my
sorry
goodness.
That it's been made. I mean, because it's based on French novelist Colette's 1920s novels, Sherry and the Last of Sherry, and it's just a shame that the themes about women and aging are still relevant in 2009. I mean, you know, we haven't gotten past any of this. So, particularly whenever you have Hollywood pairing action heroes with starlets 30 years their junior, or Woody Allen characters.
But, or Woody Allen's life in general.
This, yeah. But, you know, it's a film that has a really compelling performance from Michelle Pfeiffer, who's 51 and still gorgeous and radiant. It's got these beautiful period costumes and sets and cinematography and really great chemistry between Michelle Pfeiffer and her much younger co-star Rupert Friend. But, you know, it seems like it has all of these ingredients for sort of a steamy but kind of lightweight romantic drama. But it just really collapses under the weight of just too much melodrama and not enough real drama. I mean, there's not mm-hmm. enough real substantial drama here. It just sort of devolves into this very melodramatic, tortured pining kind
oh,
of film.
What am I going to do?
Yes, one of those.
Yeah.
But it's a shame because it reunites Stephen Frears and Christopher Hampton and Pfeiffer from
Dangerous Liaisons.
Mm-hmm. It's also set in period France, but a completely different time period. But it's never as sharp or as memorable as Dangerous Liaison is. But it's set at the turn of the 20th century in France when the upper class kind of enjoyed a real period that was a really golden age before World War I broke out. And it sort of delves into this world of elegant, high-dollar courtesans, who are also known as prostitutes, but they didn't call them that. But they were powerful women who were just able to really deftly manipulate these rich and influential men and exit affairs with people like kings and prime ministers and industrialists with enough cash to live a lifestyle almost as lavish as the people that they swindled.
So a classy prostitute.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
class. Right.
And very good at making a lot of money. But one of the savviest and most beautiful of these is named Leah, and she's played by Michelle Pfeiffer, who she's 49, and she's just disentangled herself from her latest lucrative affair, and she's really contemplating retiring. She has quite a bit of cash, and she's accumulated it by avoiding love and using sex as it's only an income-generating tool as far as she's concerned. It's not anything.
She's a businesswoman.
She's a businesswoman.
That's right. Time is money.
But she has certain duties to attend in her narrow circle of friends. Understandably, it's a pretty narrow circle, and that includes spending time with the crafty, backbiting, retired courtesan, Charlotte, who's played by Kathy Bates, who sometimes gets a little irritating with this character.
Kathy Bates is playing a courtesan.
Former.
Okay.
Retired,
she's changed.
Retired. And she gets a little over the top with this sort of role. But Charlotte invites Leah to lunch and asks her for help in dealing with her. Because Charlotte has this neglected but spoiled 19-year-old son who's named Fred, but Leah long ago christened him Sherry. And he's played by Rupert Friend. And Sherry pretty much is interested only in debauchery, and Charlotte really is afraid of him getting involved in opium and cocaine and some of these things that were pretty much just really fun things to do back in the day. But Sherry has always adored Leah and really looked up to her. But he coaxes her into a kiss, and there's this spark of passion, and they embark on this really passionate May December affair. And 6 years later, it's still going, which is unheard of to all of their courtesan friends and relations. That, But the relationship comes to an end whenever Charlotte announces she has arranged a marriage for Cherie to Edmé, who's played by Felicity Jones. Edmé's 18, and she's another neglected child of a different retired courtesan, and she's got all this money, and she also has the promise of grandchildren for Charlotte.
I need a flowchart. Wow.
So in keeping with the courtesan code, Leah and Cherie are just going to walk away from this affair just coolly indifferent, but they soon realize they've fallen in love and they can't live without each other. So, and then pretty much the rest of the film focuses on their tortured pining for each other. And they pine. And they just keep pining. But you do wonder if
they
are
you still pining? How about now?
I am still pining. But you know, you just wonder if they're going to at some point give up this charade and resume their romance, or whether they will stick with sort of the unhappy lot that they've been given. But you know, it's the friend and Pfeiffer have really good chemistry. They really make that sort of May December thing believable. But friend never really makes Cherie a character you really care about or care for. You're like, whatever. If your heart's broken, I don't care. And Frears also depends way too much on his own narration. He narrates this, and he kind of keeps you a step removed from all of the drama, because you're hearing it all through this sort of very little fruity kind of voice, like la 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 kind of narration.
He sings the whole time too.
No, but he just delivers it in this very sing-songy sort of, isn't this interesting kind of voice, and you're like, yeah, you need to shut up and let me watch the movie.
Stop interrupting me.
I'm trying to pine.
But Fate, the really standout here is Pfeiffer. She really shines in this understated role of this beauty dealing with growing older. And she's just really great in it. But you just wish she would have had a little bit more to work with. But 2.5 stars.
Wow. Okay, 3 for 3 now?
3 for 3.
Okay, all right. Let's try to break the 2.5 star run. And what do you got for us on Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs,
which
Poppy?
Would be the family-friendly pick
yes.
of the week. Because
by the way,
none of the rest
this
of these
is another,
are going to be
this is another Wire review.
Yes, this is another AP Wire review by David Germain.
20th Century Fox, you should be ashamed.
Slap, slap.
For not screening for local critics.
That's right. And their children. What about the children?
Will somebody think of the children? I can't
somebody.
Be the only one thinking
yes.
of the children
That's right.
here.
That's right.
But you see, Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs is probably the one thinking of the children this weekend. I mean, if courtesans and getting shot at isn't your thing because you're 9.
Larry David.
Larry David,
I
not
don't
your
get
thing.
It.
Why is he so sad all the time?
So, something slightly more action-oriented and more cuddly than Larry David is Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs. And
is the third movie in that series, is that correct?
Absolutely. We have made it a trilogy now. And if you're a parent and you've seen these other two movies, it's going to be more of the same. It's described here as a Yawn of the Dinosaurs adventure.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to see some similar faces, some similar places, and basically the same plot themes from the first two movies, which is families can be stitched together from all sorts of misfits. You know, it doesn't matter if you are a mammoth, a saber-toothed tiger, or a possum. You can get along.
You can be family.
Remember that, children.
You are my family.
But again, we're joined by Manny, voiced by Ray Romano, and his wife Ellie. Which
no!
Is...
No!
We got
no!
him in studio. His wife Ellie, played by Queen Latifah. Diego, which is Dennis Leary, Sid the Sloth, John Leguizamo, and two sibling possums, Crash and Eddie, voiced by Sean William Scott and Josh Peck. Interesting duo, which I hope are less annoying than Skid and Mudflap from a certain movie with robots that came out last week.
It would be virtually impossible for them not to be as annoying as those two, so I don't think there's much danger there.
There is a plus, potentially less annoying than Transformers. So here we go, Manny and Ellie, the two woolly mammoths, are expecting their first child, Diego, the saber-toothed tiger. He's losing his sense of his predator edge, and so he's going out on his own, and the lovable sloth becomes a mother to baby T-Rexes. So yes, we've got some interesting plots to follow here.
Yeah, this as a reviewer on NPR mentioned, now you've got you're going to have a bunch of 5-year-olds asking their kindergarten teachers. Now, so the mammals were on the Earth at the same time as the dinosaurs. Can you please explain this to me?
This is terrible.
This is feeding into all of the. This is like Flintstones kind of confusion. We haven't moved any farther.
When they met the Jetsons, my brain exploded. I just wanted to mention that. But
okay,
yes,
wow. Can we wrap up Ice Age Dinosaurs?
And he lives to talk. All right, go on.
Okay. Well, yes. If there is a blinding plot. You know, problem if you don't like dinosaurs hanging out with mammals. But one notable mammal here is a one-eyed weasel, voiced by Simon Pegg, who is great as Scotty in Star Trek. Hilarious.
Great, period.
Yeah.
Hilarious in general. He steals the movie. He's kind of goofy and really limber and, you know, adds some freshness to that. All those names that I've already mentioned.
And I understand he's sort of like a Captain Ahab figure in that he wants to get revenge on the dinosaurs.
Absolutely.
Simon Pegg, one-eyed weasel.
Wow.
I smell a spin-off.
He should have that on his business cards. He would get a kick out of that.
You're going to know what to expect, decent wisecracks that some of the parents will get and the kids won't. But, you know, it's a very, very simple movie. And you know, it's simply a slapstick thing for the kids to enjoy. And gets 2 stars.
It's not something like Up or anything like that where you can really get, I mean, it's multi-age, you know, sort of film. It's more like for the kids, and it sounds like a pretty straightforward retread of what they've already done with the first two.
This ain't advanced learning, kids.
It's almost the opposite of Up, because they fall down to this dinosaur land. So yes, I think we're looking at almost the opposite of Up here.
Okay.
Wow, that was nice.
Physically,
Bobby.
Good work. Metaphorically.
Metaphorically,
that was really good. And so what? And so how many stars was that?
2 stars.
2 stars.
Okay.
So we're awash in mediocrity, and if you count the Transformers movie, even more so.
Celebrate your holiday with mediocrity.
That's what we're aiming for. It's the American way. So
it's going to get better, kids. Don't worry. There will be better movies.
We've got Harry Potter coming.
It'll save the day. Okay. So whatever works. Public Enemies, Cherie.
Yes.
And Ice Age: Dawn of the Dinosaurs. All around. Sorry about that. Okay, that wraps up another podcast for this week. For Brandy McDonald and Nathan Poppy, I'm George Lang. Thanks for downloading us.